You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday. Mondays. Didn't mean to do that to you. Friday. What is this, bizarro world? Friday, August 26th. My pleasure to be with you today. Heading toward the weekend. Hope we can get you started off right. Covering a variety of topics, as we typically do here from the Big Shoe, coming from our beautiful palatial studios here in Lexington, Kentucky. Now, my guest in the second hour, really looking forward to having her on. I teach one class, as I've told you before, at our local Catholic high school. Only one in the whole diocese here. Not a prevalence of Catholics in this part of Kentucky. Lexington Catholic High School. And we had our opening mass of the school year last week and got to go and was sitting there. And the student council president got up to speak. She's a senior. Her name is Michaela Reinhardt. Now, I've known of Michaela simply because of her running exploits. She won the state last year in the level 2A that Lexington Catholic is in the cross country. And then once she won the 3,200 meters as well in the spring at the track meet. So an impressive runner, but I always heard great things about her as a person as well from a little parish in Georgetown, Kentucky, not far from Lexington. She drives in and attends. And, you know, I'll be honest with you on the whole. My attitude is you've heard one high school speech, you've heard them all. I've been to many graduations over the years, baccalaureate services, whatever. They tend to be filled with a lot of the same sort of, you know, bromides and, you know, simplistic sort of things. And, you know, if I had a nickel for every time the quote from Francis Bacon, knowledge is power, I'd be a rich man. But there was something about Michaela's speech at this mass that really impressed me, because what she did in essence was to go down the or up the row, I guess you could say, from freshman to senior. She addressed each class in turn. She did it with a tenderness and a sensitivity, but also a challenge to each class to really help build community in the school, to get beyond your own comfort zone, your own your own friendship group, and to look out for those who may be on the margins or who may be struggling and who simply need a kind word or a smile or just to be included. There was something about it. I was just so impressed with it and the way she carried herself. There was a lot of self-effacing in there. I mean, here's a girl who, I mean, she's a state champion as a junior, could be again as a senior. She's a great student, you know, very academically strong. She's got a lot going for her, and yet I sensed a genuine humility in her. But mainly I was struck by her vision of really what a school community would be, because high schools are not always the easiest places, and sometimes Catholic high schools can be just like other high schools. Very prone to cliques and almost a sort of unspoken caste system. But she obviously has a vision and a burden for overcoming that and for helping build a school of community where people experience friendship and others reaching out to them. So we're going to talk to her in the second hour and just find out what's behind all that, what drives her. And well, we may talk about her running exploits a little bit too. I mean, since she's going to be in the studio. Other things that we'll talk about today, the Pietà and God's Grace. Today, the anniversary of the day in which Michelangelo was commissioned to carve the work that made him famous. Also, why no one really loves science, and a question for Joshua Harris's critics. Joshua Harris wrote a book years ago that had a big influence on young people. He wrote it as a 21-year-old, called I Kissed Dating Goodbye, extolling the virtues of courtship and really condemning casual dating. Now, years later, there are a bunch of people saying that the book had a negative impact on their life. And Joshua Harris himself, while not apologizing, acknowledging that there's some things he's learned over the years. But I want to turn the tables a little bit and ask a question of Josh Harris's critics. So we'll get into all that on the program today. Spin the Dollar Catechism Wheel. We will look back in history and give out our What Were You Thinking awards. All that and more. Certainly welcome your calls. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4 is the number you can call or text anytime during the program. CB sitting by and waiting, kind of like a lonely high school student, the night of the dance. CB waiting for your calls. Don't make him wallow in self-pity. Help him out. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. Boy, I'm ready to raise the white flag on this whole parenting thing. Man, here's my newest metaphor on parenting. I used to use this metaphor when I would have all my children, you know, when they were all underfoot. There was a season there where we had 6 children, 8 and under. That was a pretty intense time period, and certainly more so for my wife than for me, who was a stay-at-home mom. Yes, I would go off to the office during the day. It was hard for me to complain when I got home that I was tired. These were back in the days of being a Methodist pastor, because typically if I uttered, "I'm tired," the response was, "Oh, you think you're tired?" Or I'd get those calls at the office, be sitting there and the phone would ring and I'd pick it up and it'd be my wife. She'd say, "What are you doing right now?" I said, "Well, I'm working on my sermon for Sunday," or I'm putting together a plan for our meeting tonight. Pause. "You know what I'm doing?" "No, honey, what are you doing?" "I've changed 5 diapers in the last 30 minutes." You know, it was tougher on her. But anyway, back then, when the kids were all underfoot, I used to make the analogy of trying to get somewhere with the kids was like one of those handheld, you remember those, if you're old school like me, you can remember those little handheld, very flat little games that had the tiny sort of stainless steel marbles inside. And they're all rolling around under this clear plastic, and you're trying to get each one to land in a different little hole. And, you know, just when you get, you know, let's say there are 5 little balls in there, just when you get 4 in, you try to get that 5th one in, a couple more of them will pop out. That's what it was like trying to get somewhere with that many children. Just when you think you've got them all, one of them breaks loose and runs away. Well, I'm still playing that game. It's just different now. It's kind of like the stainless steel ball in the hole is not getting somewhere. It is sort of life stability for my children, right? And it seems like I get a couple there in the hole and they seem like they're doing all right, pretty stable, all of a sudden 2 more of them break loose. You know what it feels like? It probably feels a lot like my mom and dad have felt over the years raising us. I think it's just par for the course, but man, something else. 573-4BREAD-4. 573-4BREAD-4. If you want to call in and commiserate, you'd be more than welcome. Of course, I love my children. Now between the ages of 11 and 24, so a different season with its own challenges. I wouldn't dare say that those days early on of exhaustion were challenging. They were in their own way, but the game gets even trickier, is all I'm trying to say. Not to depress you. Game gets even trickier. But here's the positive. You want me to give you the positive? The positive with your kids is you start to become sort of, you move, you don't completely ever leave the parental role, but there is a sense in which you become more like a peer with your child. You can have adult conversations. Now, and I'm going to say that's pretty cool, because I really, in terms of their character and who they are, I'm pretty proud of who our children are. Not, believe me, that I take credit. We, lots of imperfection in me, lots of imperfection in our home, but God's grace is good. And sometimes you got to realize that maybe the hole that you had for one child's, aka the stainless steel ball, may not be the best slot for them. And they got to kind of figure that out. You can't control it. I certainly know that. 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to call or text. Like I said, commiserate. But we'll get into this a little bit more. What I want to get into a little bit later in the next hour is the first reading for today, because the first reading is really one of my favorite passages in all of the writings of St. Paul. It talks about the message of the cross and how it's a very upside down image of power and salvation. But of course, it comes from a God who delights in making fools of the wise and making the simple wise. As he says, the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength. And we'll talk about that some, particularly a little later in this hour when we talk about the Pieta, God's wondrous sense of humor in the course of human affairs. Anyway, we'll be back with the question of the day and also look at a little sports and our What Were You Thinking Awards, all that and more coming up. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Friday, August 26th, here in Breadbox Media. Very thankful this week to add a new parish to our Parish Stream app, and that is the Church of the Annunciation in Paris, Kentucky. Got a couple on this track now, and hope to add more. So if you're interested in your parish having its own specific stream, what you get is all the same programming, 24/7 around the clock, each corner of this country and across the Great Plains as well, different contributors to the show, different temperaments, perspectives, topics, all through the lens of the Catholic faith. But then your commercial breaks become parish specific. So you could have someone from your parish leadership or your pastor giving an announcement, promoting some reality, giving some short training. You could have commercials from people inside your parish, the same people perhaps who advertise on the back of the bulletin could advertise on your local parish stream. It really is a great opportunity to have a sort of a communication hub that also becomes a source of learning about the faith and growing and being accompanied on this journey we're all on to learning more about the love of Christ and the beauty and the richness of the Catholic faith. So check it out at breadboxmedia.com. You can also read about our various contributors. You can learn how to get the podcasts, even how to subscribe through iTunes, Google Play, or Podbean so you can catch shows after the fact. Or you could become a friend of your favorite show and through monthly support, receive exclusive online access to specific content. So you could check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. And if you want, hey, become a friend of this show. Also follow me on Twitter or like my show on Facebook. Mike Allen Show is the handle. My question today, I'm going to have Michaela Reinhardt, local high school senior, on in the second hour to talk about her vision of school community And one of the things that she did in her speech, of course, is she sort of worked up the food chain in the different members of the student body, had each different group stand, and then she addressed them. She had the lowly freshmen, and then moving up to the sophomores, who she sort of compared to having middle child syndrome, and then the juniors, and then the seniors. Now, there are other ways to break up high school groups, right? If you think about the old classic 80s film, The Breakfast Club, there were these sort of stereotype groups. You had the jocks, you had the popular kids, you had the the stoners, you had the geeks, or the nerds, the brainiacs, you had the sort of outcast weirdos. I guess you could throw in there, you had your preppies. They're all kind of different stereotype groups that any movie about high school students has played well. Which group would have been your best fit, if any? Maybe you bounced around between different groups. I was probably in this wasn't in the Breakfast Club, maybe, but I was kind of in the band nerd group, though they had a much more demeaning nickname for us at our local high school. So, I was in the marching band and all that entailed, and those were where most of my best friends were. So that was the group I kind of hung out with. But a big, big school, I think my graduating class was over 500 kids. So, you tend to try to find your comfort zone, and there were plenty of people in my senior class that I didn't know at all. I certainly was not among the super popular group, right? That wasn't me. May have been you, though. But anyway, I'd love to hear from you on that. 573-4BREAD-4 is the number you can call or text, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you may prefer to answer through Facebook or Twitter, Mike Allen Show, the handle. Some responses I've gotten to this question so far. Let's see. Megan says, nerd. I guess the Anthony Michael Hall character from the old Breakfast Club film. Tom says, with a few additions, we always stuck by our friends from grammar school. Some were jocks, some were heads, some were geeks. We all stuck together. I like this comment from Leo, Mr. Freak Daddy, our general manager at Breadbox. Total prep. This is funny. I remember standing in the hall with another friend of mine with our matching weight line cuts and polo collars up when a guy in a group of FFA students, for those scoring at home, that's Future Farmers of America, FFA groups guys, shouts down the hall and says, "Look down there, dudes, it's Wham!" You remember Wham, right? Wake me up before you go-go, George Michael, all the rest. Leo assures me I wasn't at all offended, which prompted me to ask a prepster from Graffenburg, Kentucky. Leo laughs often about his upbringing. I mean, you had to drive 15 minutes from Leo's house just to get into the country, let alone the city. Maybe compensating, I guess, for the Graffenburg roots. So, love to hear from you on that. Was there a particular group that you hung with? I was thinking about that the day. We do this thing in my class at school where on Wednesdays, I have them write down a couple of questions apiece. I tell them anything's fair game. We do this thing called Q&A Wednesday. And so every Wednesday, I'll draw three questions out and answer them, reserving the right, of course, to refuse to answer any question. But I tell them anything's fair game if they want to ask it. Just no guarantee it'll get answered. So one of the questions was, what were you like in high school? Well, that's an increasingly distant memory. I mean, you're talking about the class of 83, so I mean, I may as well have been riding a covered wagon to school with these kids, but I was trying to think about that. Like I said, I was kind of a band nerd. I was short, but I was kind of a smart aleck too. I know it's hard to believe. Red hair. I hate to fulfill stereotypes, but I was. Got kicked out of a couple of classes. Always trying to be funny. Sometimes succeeding, but that was my high school career. Anyway, but I'd love to hear about yours if you want to chime in. Man, poor old Tony Romo. Poor Dallas Cowboys. Tony Romo leaves last night with a back injury. Says the very last thing the Dallas Cowboys wanted to happen in Thursday night's preseason game against the Seattle Seahawks. Tony Romo got hurt, and once again, it's his back. Well, I guess you could look on the bright side. It's not his collarbone. Tony Romo just, I guess he's going to be one of those guys, fragile, and now he's getting older. The good news, if you're a Cowboys fan, is I think the future at your quarterback position is pretty bright with Dak Prescott. I could be wrong, but as a Kentucky Wildcat football fan, I was subject to watching Dak Prescott's excellence riddle my Kentucky Wildcats defense over the last few years. So certainly, I'm impressed with Dak Prescott, and I think he'll end up being sort of a hidden jewel for the Cowboys. But again, throwing a rookie in this early is going to be pretty tough. But we'll see. Maybe it won't be that bad for Mr. Romo. There was one other sports note that I was looking at here, if I can find it. Oh, yeah, here we go. Which school should be considered college football royalty? It's not quite college football. I think we've got a week from Saturday, though, before it starts. High school football in action. Tonight I'll be calling a doubleheader, actually, at our local Catholic high school. I better have some lozenges in the booth with me because, I want to have a voice on Monday. But this story from ESPN.com asking, who's college football royalty? Who are the blue bloods in the college football world? And they boil it down to 8 blue blood teams. So if your team's not on here, don't shoot the messenger. They've got, Alabama. I guess they've got 5 programs tied for number one. Way to take a stand, ESPN. They take the easy way out, and they list 5 teams as tied for number one among the Blue Bloods, and that is Alabama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Oklahoma, and USC. Not calm down, South Carolina fans. I'm talking about the Trojans. And then you've got number 6, the Michigan Wolverines. Ooh, that's not going to sit well in Ann Arbor. The Texas Longhorns, number 7. By the way, Q Michigan fans saying they've won more games than any other program. Number 7, the Texas Longhorns. And number 8, the Nebraska Cornhuskers. I think that's fair. I mean, programs like Florida State, Florida, for example, they are, in terms of the whole history of college football, sort of the nouveau riche, I mean, they've not always been around. Florida State was an abysmal program back in the 70s. And into the early 80s. So it's really only been recently. So that's an interesting ranking. Anybody else you'd put up there, give me a shout and let me know. 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. This is a great time of year, though. I need to get out an old tape and watch a Keith Jackson called game. Oh, Nelly! Then I'll be ready for college football. Okay, let's move on to our What Were You Thinking nominees of the day. Spanning the globe, as we always like to do. See if any of these we can squeeze in before the commercial break. Man rescued after being stuck between 2 Oakland buildings for hours. Pittsburgh police. Oh, wait a minute. What is this saying? Oakland. Is there an Oakland, Pennsylvania? I guess so. Anyway, man rescued, stuck between 2 Oakland buildings. Pittsburgh police, fire, EMS, and public works crews worked to free a man who was trapped between 2 buildings Tuesday morning in Oakland. It all started around 2 a.m. on Forbes Avenue. According to police, a Pitt student became wedged between 2 buildings in a gap that ranged from 16 to 18 inches wide when he tried to leap from one to the other. Now, look, I wouldn't brag about my own leaping ability, but 16 to 18 inches? He attempted to go to the shorter building, from the shorter to the taller, but missed. After falling, he became suspended about 5 feet off the ground. Well, you made an impression. We won't say which kind you made. We'll be back with more. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. We'll be right back.
right at the bottom of the hour, actually 29 minutes before the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show. Here on this Friday, August 26th, again asking the question, before I talk to high school senior and student council president and the remarkably humble Michaela Reinhardt in the second hour. What high school group sort of stereotyped clique did you most identify with? Was it the nerds? Was it the jocks? Was it the stoner? Was it the popular kid? Who was it? The prepster? 573-4-BREAD-4, if you want to chime in. 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you could post your thought on Facebook or on Twitter. So I was telling my high school students earlier this week, I was saying, you know, I know you're at a point in your life where it just feels like your name, your reputation, your image in high school is going to be the thing that defines you forever. I said, just trust me when I say that's not the case. It's amazing how it doesn't take long. I mean, just really, maybe even just a year or two out of high school before you kind of look back on all that stuff and realize how inauthentic it was and how transient it was. And, you know, though it is funny when you get back together, maybe at a reunion, how those old sort of labels start to manifest themselves again. For some people, that's a good thing. For some, it's not so good. So anyway, I did assure them that you're enjoying these years. That's great. These aren't the best days of your life. Don't buy that. Anyway, I'm not sure what are the best days. I mean, each one has its own ups and downs. You know what I mean? Anyway, let's get back to our What Were You Thinking nominees. We had one, the guy who tried to jump. That's embarrassing, between 16 and 18 inches and got wedged between two buildings. We're going to have for our second nominee, we're going to have a tie here, okay? Woman pops open beer in front of cops after nearly running over cyclist is the one story. So here's a woman. She gets pulled over. I think this is from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. She gets pulled over after nearly killing someone, and while she's in conversation with the police, pops open a cold one. Again, I know we do crazy things when we are inebriated, but really, that's only topped, I think, by the guy. But still, I'm going to just make it a tie here. Man charged after allegedly blowing pot smoke in cop's face during traffic stop. What? This from Brantford, Ontario. So at least it's not our country, those crazy Canadians. Anyway, 25-year-old driver has been charged with allegedly blowing pot smoke into an officer's face in Brantford, Ontario. Now look, I go over this with my children. You get pulled over, you put the car in park, you put your hands up on the wheel where they can see them, and you stare straight ahead. No movement. I didn't think I had to tell them, and oh, don't blow pot smoke into the officer's face. I guess I'll make a mental note of that. But the winner of the What Were You Thinking Award is going to go to Google Box's Siddiqui brothers, who are being investigated by anti-terror police over an ISIS Facebook joke. Now, listen, this from Great Britain, I guess. There's some things you just don't joke about, okay? ISIS, one of them. So whoever thought it would be cute, funny, you know, it's like you don't say bomb in an airport, not if you don't want to go get questioned in the back by big burly people. You don't joke about ISIS, especially if you are of Middle Eastern descent. Don't do it. Oh, I know it's tempting, but don't do it. So that's our winner. For some reason, my laptop must be some kind of conspiracy. My laptop is freezing up on me. Oh, here we go. The Siddiqui brothers being reported to anti-terror police. Pulling it up here. They're all three sitting there wearing camouflage gear, too. Not a bright move. Oh, here we go. Reality TV brothers. There we go. Let's see. Basit Raza and Umar Siddiqui posed for a photo dressed in camouflage. It's been claimed that several friends commented on the image with jokes about the terrorist organization. One even uploaded a picture of an ISIS soldier holding a gun. Anyway, not smart. So anyway, we'd love to hear from you. If you've got your own nominee from your own life, it's always fun to laugh at ourselves. Might as well do that while everyone else is laughing at us. Take some of the sting out. Or if you want to report on another one, you could send it my way. 573-4BREAD-4. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your thought on Facebook or on Twitter. Let's see here. Ruffling through my archives. What did I want to get to here in this segment? Blanking out. We had a little clock issue on our computer. It's kind of thrown me off. And I'm not faking it well. Oh, that's right. This whole Pieta story. You know, I always look back, try to do a little digging to find out some things that happened on this day in history, and saw that this was the day in 1498 that the famous statue of the Pieta by Michelangelo was commissioned. He was just a young, virtually unknown artist at that time. And this from Mental Floss, which is always a good website to go to. 15 things you should know about Michelangelo's Pieta, which to me is one of the most stunning statues. Of course, the Pieta shows the Blessed Virgin Mary holding in her lap the deceased body of her son who's been pulled from the cross. Now, this is, you know, Michelangelo's is not the only Pieta. This is an artistic image that has been utilized in many circumstances. To me, one of the most powerful Pietas is at the end of the movie, The Passion of the Christ. If you've seen that, Mel Gibson's masterpiece, really, where I think it's Maria Morgenstern who plays Mary so powerfully. It's really a film, The Passion, that is very Marian. I don't know that I noticed it as much the first time I saw it. I was not yet Catholic, didn't have that Marian sensibility, but her prevalence throughout and interwoven throughout the whole Passion of the Christ is very obvious and notable. And of course, that scene in the Passion where he is pulled down from the cross, it's toward the very end of the film after the brutality that you've experienced, at times begging for it to stop. And then finally, what brings it to a stop is our Lord's death. And he's brought down from the cross and his bloody corpse really is laid there in Mary's lap. Most poignant moment of the film, she looks up at the camera as the camera sort of begins to pan back, her lifeless son's body laying across her lap, and she just stares with those dark, dark eyes into the camera. It's right into your eyes. It is, whew. Now that's a powerful Pieta, but so is, of course, Michelangelo's. Absolutely beautiful. But here's some things you didn't know according to Mental Floss. One, a French cardinal commissioned it for his own funeral. Now, there's some humility for you. French Cardinal Jean de Bilharis, who served the church in Rome, wanted to be remembered long after he died. To achieve this goal, he hired Michelangelo to make a memorial for his tomb that would capture a scene popular in North European art at the time, the tragic moment of the Virgin Mary taking down Jesus from the cross. You know, you know your ego's big when you're commissioning sculptors to make statues for your own funeral crypt. Number two, after more than 200 years, the Pieta was moved to St. Peter's Basilica. Number three, Michelangelo carved it from a single slab of marble. Specifically, he used Carrara marble, a white and blue stone named for the Italian region where it is mined. It's been a favorite medium of sculptors since the days of ancient Rome. Number four, the Pieta is the only work Michelangelo ever signed. If you look closely, the sculptor's signature can be found across Mary's chest. 16th century art historian Giorgi Vasari told the tale of how Michelangelo made his mark. One day, entering the place where it was set up, he found there a great number of strangers from Lombardy who were praising it highly, and one of them asked one of the others who had done it, and he answered, "Argabo from Milan." Michelangelo stood silent, but thought it something strange that his labors should be attributed to another. And one night he shut himself in there, and having brought a little light and his chisels, carved his name upon it. He later regretted the act of vanity and resolved never to sign another piece of his work. Number five, the piece made him famous when he was only 24 years old. 24. Wow, he would live to be 88. The sculpture has been criticized for his depiction of Mary. Some church observers sneered that the artist made her look too youthful to have a son who was 33. As Jesus was to believe at his death, he defended this choice to his biographer, Ascanio Condivi. He said, "Do you not know that chaste women stay fresh much more than those who are not chaste? How much more in the case of the virgin who had never experienced the least lascivious desire that might change her body?" Huh. Number seven, it's a mashup of sculpting styles. Michelangelo has long been praised for marrying Renaissance ideals of classical beauty with poses that favored naturalism. Another nod to the Renaissance influence is a structure that resembles a pyramid formed by Mary's head flowing down her arms and to the bottoms of her robes. Here was one I didn't realize the Pieta brutally attacked. Back in 1972, an unemployed geologist from Hungary leapt over the railings with a hammer. Laszlo Toth. What would possess you? My goodness. Knocked off Mary's left arm. Had to be repaired. We'll be back with more. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome back into the Mike Allen Show, 14 minutes before the hour, here on this early Friday morning, the 26th of August. Man, where is the summer going? Well, it's about 92 degrees here today, or supposed to be, so I guess summer ain't going anywhere anytime soon. My question of the day, which stereotyped high school group, if any, was your most natural fit? If you think about the old movie Breakfast Club, or probably just about any other high school film, usually you've got the different clique groups. You've got the jocks, you've got the brainiacs, you've got the popular kids, the cheerleader types, you've got the outcast, you've got the rebel, you've got these various groups, the prepsters. Which high school group would be your most natural fit, or was your most natural fit? Dave, commenting on Facebook, says, "Went to three high schools, couldn't afford cliques or groups, just did my thing and made friends as they came along." A lot of athletes and partiers. Dave, now part of the clique, the late middle-aged fathers who meet at White Castle once every few months to eat a sack of sliders. Dave there the other day with me enjoying some of the finer cuisine. And then Jason says, "Vampire Slayer sidekick." That was a much more obscure high school group, but I'll take Jason's word for it. Jason Hall, my regular guest on the program, being his typical witty self. So anyway, if you want to chime in, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Might ask if you went back in time, you think you'd be in a different group today? That would be an interesting thought. 573-4BREAD-4, call or text, email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your thought on Facebook or on Twitter. Let's really quick, we were talking about the Pieta being commissioned back in 1498. Let's do a little other browse through history really quick. Let's see, Antoine Lavoisier, the French scientist, born on this day in 1743. Of course,
Antoine Laurent would be executed in the Reign of Terror in the French Revolution, which may surprise you to know, by the way, talking about stereotypes. The Catholic Church has never killed a scientist that I know of, not for the sake of their science. The enlightened French revolutionaries did just that. One of the great minds in scientific history, really one of the most influential people to ever live, died at the guillotine and some of that craziness. So John Lennon imagining a world without religion, that's who built the guillotines, my friend. 1910, Mother Teresa born. Really looking forward to next week. I'm going to have John Allen and Inez San Martin of Crux on the show together next Thursday, live from Rome, getting ready for what promises to be a blockbuster weekend in the Eternal City with the canonization of Mother Teresa, the diminutive Albanian nun. She was born Agnes Bosakcu, not sure how you say that, in Macedonia back in 1910. So happy 106th. Pray for us, Blessed Mother Teresa. This is Women's Suffrage Day. The 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, guaranteeing women the right to vote, was declared in effect, coming up on the 100th anniversary of that important date. 1929, the first U.S. roller coaster built. I can still remember my first roller coaster. This shows you how old I am, CB. I remember when the racer, I remember the year it opened at Kings Island. I was there. Kings Island is in Cincinnati. If you ever saw, there was an episode of the Brady Bunch where they rode the racer. Anyway, 1978 on this day, Cardinal Albino Luciani of Venice became Pope John Paul I. He would reign, of course, as the successor of Peter for 33 days. And then happy birthday to Macaulay Culkin, who is 36 years old today. And on this day 30 years ago, lost a comedic genius, Tadeusz Konopka, known better as Ted Knight, actor from, of course, Mary Tyler Moore, and, what was that series he was in where he played a cartoonist? That'll come to me. Funny show. And then, of course, known for his run as Judge Smales in the classic Caddyshack. I saw a T-shirt floating around, or maybe I can't remember if it was a meme during this election season where we have what seems like at least two majorly unacceptable candidates. I saw a shirt going around that said, Judge Smales for President 2016. Campaign slogan, you'll get nothing and like it. So transferring that same attitude toward his nephew Spalding, or was a grandson Spalding, that he could take the rest of the American pipe. So rest in peace, Ted Knight. Too Close for Comfort. That was the show he was in back in the 80s. I knew it would come to me eventually. Anyway, back to the 15 things you should know about Michelangelo's Pieta. Like I said, on this day, commissioned in 1498. Whenever I take my bucket list trip over to Rome, I definitely want to see that. Evidently, after the statue was attacked, somebody who leapt the railings back in 1972 to attack it with a hammer with 12 blows, Mary's arm, left arm knocked off, tip of her nose snapped, and her cheek and left eye damaged. There was evidently some debate about whether it would be restored. You know, I guess leave her like the Venus de Milo, for example, with the arms missing. First argument was that the Pieta's damage was now part of its meaning, speaking to the violence of our modern age. Others proposed the sculpture be repaired, but with visible seams as a reminder of the assault. Ultimately, a seamless restoration was chosen with the goal of making it impossible for observers to know that it had ever been attacked. That restoration took 10 months. A couple of others here. Let's see. The Pieta's attack had an unexpected silver lining. During its diligent restoration, workers discovered a secret signature on the piece. Hidden in the folds of Mary's left hand was a subtle M believed to stand for Michelangelo. And they may have actually discovered the model for his Pieta There was a restored 12-inch statue from the late 15th century that could have served as the test run for his statue. There are some who now believe that this piece, previously attributed to another 15th century sculptor, was a proof of a concept given to the cardinal to secure the commission. So fascinating. What I think, you know, the one that's not listed here, and this is what I love here about the way God works and his grace and all the rest. This was a time of great corruption in the Vatican. Corruption in the papacy, corruption among the cardinals. There was great worldliness, of course, a great political intrigue and desire for power. And of course, in the midst of all that, Jesus preserved his church. I think it's fascinating that that the church has never hidden from the fact that there have been some scoundrels as popes. No question about it. And yet, even with those scoundrels, the church's teaching has remained without being undermined. There were no efforts to try to destroy or undo centuries and centuries of church teaching. They may have lived their lives of immorality and intemperance, but they left church teaching alone. Similarly, here, something that was done perhaps for very imperfect motives as a sign of someone's own ego, this cardinal who commissioned Michelangelo to make this statue, much like the popes who would later commission Michelangelo to paint the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, for example. Not exactly men of great piety and purity. And yet, God, who can write straight with crooked lines, taking these impure beginnings and bringing about this beautiful treasure that we have, these works of art that have continued to bless the church and to bless the world for centuries. One of the most misguided things, honestly, that you sometimes hear about is this, well, you know, you just, the Vatican needs to sell off all that art. They just sell off all that art, then they could feed the world. What the thing you forget is, number one, that art doesn't belong to Pope Francis. That art doesn't belong to the cardinals in Rome. That art belongs to the entire people of God. 1 point something billion who can access and see those works of art and be blessed and enriched by them and have a window into sacred things. Those are not the current Pope and cardinals' items to sell. That's oftentimes forgotten. And number two, the reality, as I said, that they do feed us in ways, maybe a food that goes beyond bread and water. As Jesus himself said, you know, I have food to eat that you know not of. And it's also a very imprudent thing to do because, believe me, you go through all that, you sell all those things off, then a generation from now, after all that money's gone, that treasure is no longer accessible to everyone, then what do you have? You're back to square one. So that nonsense, we just need to be quiet about that kind of stuff and enjoy these gifts that we have, no matter how they were created. We'll be back with a new hour. This is The Mike Allen Show.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.